Okay, so today is the 14th of June, 2018, Aleph of the month of Tammuz, and we have Mefarshim Day for Perek Chaf Dalet, chapter 24. So if we go to the beginning, so the Mefarshim are right away bothered by what? There's a pretty steep shift that all of a sudden took place here, that we go from discussing the Moedim into discussing the lighting of the menorah. Now, actually, I remember hearing once upon a time that this is like a source in the Torah for Hanukkah. That right after Sukkot, what's the very next thing that's mentioned? The laws of the menorah. Take it or leave it. But the Mefarshim don't say that. Rashi said, and they don't necessarily take it straight on. Rashi says, oh, why do we have a mitzvah of Neros here, even though we already learned about it earlier in the beginning of Parshas Tetzaveh, tells us how to light the menorah. So he comments, oh yeah, that's as part of building the Mishkan. But here we have to talk about it again, because this is actually the mitzvah of doing it. That's what Rashi comments. The Ramban has a couple of other things that he discusses. He says, we need this for two reasons. He says, number one, that we need to request the shemen from the people. That the Nesiim brought stuff and people brought stuff, but now it's like run out. The oil has run out, so now we need to go back and make a request from the people in order to continue to replenish the stock of the menorah. The other thing that the Ramban comments on is that we have special limudim that we learn out from here of shaliyad likwa menorah tahor, to only light a tahor menorah that's being learned out here, and not that you could set it up outside and then bring it in, and not that it should be set up or propped up by pebbles, rather it needs to be straight on the ground and the candles need to be straight there. We have separate limudim that are here. But the Ramban also is not really discussing why specifically in this section of the Torah do we have this discussion. So the Orach Chaim quotes Rashi, he quotes the Ramban, and he says they don't do the trick. But maybe we could say the following connections to the previous section. Number one, says the Orach Chaim, that everything in the previous parak, everything in the previous chapter was actually seven. Where do we see seven of everything in the previous parak? Says, well, Pesach was 7 days, and Sukkot is 7 days, and Yeran Shemitah Seres, but it's 7 days. And what? Simchas Haminim is 7 days, which means Sukkot is 7 days, and the holiday of the four species is 7 days, which is interesting. Well, I thought those were the same thing. So it's not exactly the same thing. They sort of are like an overlap of mitzvos. There is some lumdus behind that. Uh-oh. See, in Rabbi Greenspan's recorder, the memory is full, so it's not recording. But, what? So,
I don't ever.
Yes, there is some lumdus there. There is a discussion about the saying of Shehechiyanu on the second night of Sukkot, that you may have noticed that it says in the Siddur that some flip the order of the brachos of Kiddush. Right, that's the way it says in that we say. On the first night we say Leishir Basuka followed by Shechianu, and some have the minhag the second night of saying Shechianu followed by Leishir Basuka. Why in the world would that be? So that's part of this discussion, that you have the festival of Sukkot, there's the mitzvah of eating in the sukkah, and there's the mitzvah of bringing the dal minim, and they aren't necessarily all one thing. It could possibly be things that merge together, but we're not talking about that today. And then he continues on and says, also Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Where's the seven in the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? He says, well, that takes place in the seventh month. Ha ha! And then he also says, so therefore we should include the mitzvah menorah right next to it also, because that's also seven, because there's seven candles there. And then he goes one step further. We also have a number seven by the Lechem HaPanim. How do we have the seven by the Lechem HaPanim? Where is the seven there? Where is the seven? Because if you stack them up appropriately, right, they actually have the seven. No. There is seven on each side. How do you get to seven on each side? How do you get to seven on each side? So Bruce is saying, seven on each side? That's not how it... All right, there is how many on each side?
Six.
Six on each side. But what in addition to the six was there? There is also the zichin with the lavona. There is these spoons with lavona, with the spices that were in it, or whatever lavona was exactly. And that gives you seven. So the Rosh Chaim says, there's another seven. Seven of the lechem hapanim that appear on each side. Okay, that's one thing. Oh, he adds in also, by the way, Sfiras Omer also is seven. How do you get Sfiras Omer seven? 7 weeks. Okay.
Finally something.
All right, you got that one good. So then comes then he continues on and says, oh, and also, that's one possibility. The other possibility he suggests is...
So he's bringing Hanukkah in that too as being one of those...
No, he doesn't.
Thingies?
No, I said that.
Okay.
I said something. He doesn't talk about the idea of Hanukkah. But then he continues on and says, another possibility of the connection between menorah and sukkah is the following, because in the pasuk it says, v'chutz l'parocha sa'idus, right? V'chu elecha, v'chutz l'parocha sa'idus, outside of the parochas, outside of the curtain of testimony. So what is that? So the Medrash says, "V'chi la'ora hayatzarich." Do they really need the light? For all the 40 years that they were in the desert, they traveled by way of the light of Hashem. Right? They had the light as shelo yuhochem la'ora chama el la'or hashchina she'roim mashi b'tochat tefuach el edus l'bayi olam. Right? So they had the light of the Shechina to shine the way. So rather, what was it? El edus l'bayi olam. Rather, it's an edus for the rest of the world that this light is somehow representing the idea of Hashem. So therefore, it's right outside the parochas ha'idus, right, which is this, which is where the menorah is, to give that testimony not to light up the room, but to light up the world. Okay? So then he continued on, V'hu mashin nishakim he Hashem, b'smichu zeh shel mitzvah ha-menorah l'mitzvah ha-sukkah. Maybe that's what the connection is to the mitzvah ha-sukkah. Why? Lomar, ki Yisrael l'tzad anani ha-kavod, lo ya la'am lo'or ha-shemesh, v'alichasam haisa lo'or yisbarach. That when Bnei Yisrael traveled, they traveled with the Anani HaKavod. The Anani HaKavod is what brought forth this light. And therefore, the Anani HaKavod is connected to the mitzvah of Sukkah. Im kein mitzvahs menorah ina el l'parochas ha'idus, edus l'bayolam. Edus, testimony to the rest of the world. And that perhaps is what Sukkah is as well. Even though Sukkah is, we had the lechem upon him, they had Sukkos anyways. And somehow that testifies to the rest of the world that it's not necessarily for us, but to make a demonstration to the rest of the world, and that's the connection between the menorah and sukkahs. Fine. Okay. The Sforno also has a suggestion as to what this would be. Did he make a connection between the two sections? I forget. Still in Pasuk Beis, Pasuk Gimel. The Sforno does not give the reason for the connection. No. But both of them say, why do we have this here? So the Rashbam says, Parsha Zunisnes, Lefisha Menorah, Nochach HaShulchan, Lahayra al HaShulchan, Sholav Lacham HaPanishim for Rishkan, Shekolz them Metikun HaShulchan Umisiduro, Hashem and Lahayra Pasla Aruch. That the reason we talk about the menorah here is because we're about to talk about the Shulchan, and we haven't talked about the Shulchan yet. I mean, the question that's bothering Rashi was, why, it wasn't really why is this here, but rather why do we have a mitzvah of menorah if we already talked about the mitzvah of menorah? So the Rashbam says, well, because the menorah has to do with the Shulchan, so therefore halachos of the menorah should go next to the Shulchan. Now why is the Shulchan brought here? Well, that's a different question. Okay, but comes the Sforno. The Sforno says, "Savei sovi chui lach hashemen, achar shekala hashemen." After they finished the shemen, she's nadvu mulach as a mishkan that they brought. They had got a down payment on oil when they offered their first. When they offered the korbanos in the beginning, and when they first built the mishkan, they got going. But now you need to replenish the funds, and it's already been a little while, so that's why they're requesting shemen and talking about the mitzvah now. Why did it say Aaron would do it? Yaroch oso Aaron, that Aaron would go and set up the menorah and light the menorah. So the Shmona says, it doesn't have to be Aaron. Right? And similarly with the Ketoris doesn't have to be brought by the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol is allowed to go on vacation every once in a while, or maybe have his teeth removed, whatever, to have a doctor's visit, right? He doesn't have to be there all the time like that. But why did he talk about Aaron? Well, he says because in the days of the desert, that's who did it, right? That the Mishkan every day in the desert was like Yom Kippur for all generations. Was it says kivanan eros hakaparos, that the mishka the shechina was seen v'zeki b'chol yemei hamidbar nemar ki anon Hashem ala mishkan yomam, that the cloud was on the mishkan during the day v'ish tia laila bo, and at night there was fire there v'lachin hayamin haroi sheyu ma'isek toras v'adlekas there was done by the Kohen Gadol. mean, it didn't necessarily have to be done by a Kohen Gadol, but in the Mishkan, while in the desert, the Mishkan was had a bechinas of Yom Kippur to it. In what way? So it seems like because the Shechina was very much present, and I would add in also maybe because there was somebody going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on a regular basis, right? That's where Moshe would have his discussions. So for that reason, because it was sort of in the category of Yom Kippur, so therefore Aaron did it all the 40 years in the desert, even though during the Baal Pi Halacha, Al Pi Din, Beis HaMikdash, it didn't have to be done by the Kohen Gadol, it could be done by any Kohen that was available.
But don't we know later that Aaron Kohen was lighting the menorah?
There's another section. There's another time when the menorah is discussed. Padlos Chas Haneros, the Mokanei menorah.
Okay. Yeah.
So it seems like you would have to say that there's some kind of order problem here, because the assumption is there that that's right away in the beginning, right? That that's right after the giving of the Nesim. The Nesim brought their gifts, and then it was done right away.
Yeah.
So maybe you could say it's out of order. Maybe this is these two stories are merging together. I don't know. Okay. So what else do we got? By the way, this Sforno continues on and says, and by the way, it's the same thing by the Lechem HaPadim, just as we have to talk about the menorah, because we need to replenish the oil reserves, we also have to replenish the wheat reserve, that the solas was already used up, and therefore there's also a request for funding in order to provide for the Lechem HaPadim, in order to provide for the Lechem HaPadim that would be on the Shulchan. Okay, what else? Okay, so moving right along, so the second half of the parak has to do with this this person who was making the who cursed Hashem, the Megadeth, right? That this mysterious Ben Isha Yisraelis, and he was the son of a Ish Mitzri. We don't have any names, and the truth is, however, we do get the name a little bit later on, right? V'shem Moshe Lo Mizvas Divri L'matei Dan. So that's we were introduced to this guy, what he does, and then we learn his actual, not his name, but at least his mother's name. So there's a Ramban here, and then there's an Or HaChaim. So the Ramban says, this is the Tishrei Halacha. The Ramban in Pasuk Yud, right? So the first thing that he says is, Taima v'yitzi b'soch ir, b'toch b'nei Yisrael, v'chein v'yosi b'soch ir, ki tse mi beiso o mi mako mosho el ayir, that he left where he was, and he went into the city, where everybody was. And there was a fight in the city, and they were brought to Moshe, and it's mentioned here, like it says above, ki chet bisfasav al ishe Hashem ulchichu ha'ishi Yisraeli, v'yinatzu shneim v'ichar apo, v'kalel nafsho. That two of them, that what was the reasoning for his curse, so what motivated his curse, the Medrash says, is that he saw this Lechem HaPanim, and the Lechem HaPanim doesn't get eaten for a week. So he has Lechem HaPanim sitting out there for an entire week. He says, it's not appropriate that the king, does the king eat fresh bread, or does the king eat stale bread? Right. So that's inappropriate, and that's what brought about his curse. That's what the Medrash suggests. That's why it's following the mitzvah of the Lechem HaPanim. Lechem HaPanim leads into this idea. There is one of my rabbeim told me when we were in yeshiva. If you did your berzon from Noah Eretz, so the food, at least, you know, when he was in charge, he always made sure that the food was good, or did his best to make sure that there was good food there. So he said that when he was in his yeshiva growing up, a certain yeshiva, the bread was always stale, and he asked the mishkiach once about it, and he says, well, we bring in bread and then we leave it for a day or two before we serve it, so that way the boys eat less. Yes.
Good for the budget.
Yes. So somebody, and someone else told me that he was in a different large yeshiva where he once asked the baker, like, hey, when do we get fresh bread? He said, oh, yesterday. So anyways, that's perhaps what led about to this. Right, so that's the miracle. He didn't necessarily know that. He just saw this bread sitting out there and knowing that was going to be eaten later on. And I'm curious about whether that actually worked in the second Beis HaMikdash. I got to check the list there, right? There's things that appeared in the first Beis HaMikdash that didn't appear in the second Beis HaMikdash. So is this one of those things? So anyways, but then the Ramban continues on and also points out that there's halachos that come out from here, right? This idea that the child is going to be considered Jewish, even though only the mother is Jewish and not the father is Jewish, so that's learnt out here. Also that he's not, that if it's a she, she's not allowed to marry the Kohen, he's still considered pogum to the point that she would not be allowed to marry a Kohen. I'm not sure if we pass in that way, but at least assuming here, a child of a non-Jewish parent, a daughter of a non-Jewish parent, the Ramban suggests here, would be prohibited to Kohanim. He also has the Tzarfatim Omer. Omer, he quotes the Tzarfatim. Who are the Tzarfatim? What country is known as Tzarfas? Tzarfas.
That's my only guess. Where is it?
It's led today by Emmanuel Macron.
Oh, that place.
France. Tzarfas is France. Frog. So who's the Chachmei Tzarfas then? So the Chachmei Tzarfas are the Balei Tosfos. So there is no Tosfos right. On the Chumash, but there is the Chizkuni. Well, there's the Dasakein and the Balei Tosfos, and the Chizkuni as well, I believe, is Balei Tosfos. I think that's where this is actually coming from. So what does he point out here? He says Kitam Hagerus Mishaya Kodem Ish Hayisraeli, right, that points out here that he was Megayer, right? That's one of the things that they make a comment about. The first Lahem Al Pi Hashem. Somebody had said something about him being forget. But he says Kitam Hagiris if they shaya kodem isha Yisraeli kol echad pasul chavero b'mumo ki shnehem lo ayu anshei shem v'lo nodu ki mitzada v'usam, that until the Torah was given, how did we figure out religion follows the father, right? So it was the Torah that was mechadesh that would follow the mother and not the father. So when was this guy born? Assuming Rashi is right that it's the child of the father, that his father was before Matan Torah, right? If the child was born before Matan Torah, so then according to the tradition that existed before Matan Torah, the child would be considered not Jewish. So therefore, in order for him to become Jewish, he would have had to convert. That's what the Chizkuni points out, and continues the Ramban and says, yeah, but we don't necessarily have to assume that way. It could be that idea was given beforehand, but of course it's the Ramban himself that struggles, as we learned in the Shir between Mincha and Marav this past week. It's the Ramban himself that struggles with what exactly was the status of the mitzvahs of the Torah before Matan Torah, mm-hmm. And gives suggestions other than just saying that all the Avos kept the Torah. So, anyways, yes. Right.
So where are the people like him? Where is he supposed to live?
He gets an apartment.
If he can afford it.
He's got to become what, like a renter or something?
He is not entitled to a to Yerusha. Where'd the Levium live? So he bought a house, or if he couldn't afford it, not everyone has to live in Yerushalayim. You can live up north. There's plenty of room up north to live.
But I'm saying that let's say the tribe of Dan, they weren't their land wasn't in Yerushalayim. Their land was up north. Wherever.
Well, this is once they got into Israel. This is talking about in the desert, but okay. He wouldn't get land. The answer is he wouldn't get land.
So
he would buy land. He would buy, or he'd rent an apartment, or he'd...
he'd have to buy it. Oh, he wouldn't get it for free, but he could buy it. They could sell it off. They could chop up some air.
Yeah, now there's issues of during Yovel it goes back to its owner, but that's only outside. It's not in cities. In walled cities, right, you bought land, once you kept it for a year, you would keep it forever. That doesn't go back to its original owner. Okay. So there's land available. You got a good realtor, and hopefully he was able to get into the market early before he got priced out, and before the deep state started controlling a lot of the land. That was a problem. I think somebody told me once that he remembered getting an offer to purchase a house in the old city after the summer after the 67 war, that you could buy an apartment in the old city for $10,000. Right, apartments that are now worth millions of dollars, you buy for $10,000. The person said, "Yeah, if I had $10,000, then I would have bought." But who had $10,000? Okay, so the Orach Chaim points out, first of all, that we don't mention his name. Right? We don't mention his name. Why don't we mention his name? So he says, why do we need to mention his name? Right? He ends up getting killed, and we don't need to mention his name. You know, there's no lesson that's going to be learned from his name, which is a very interesting thing. I mean, what is the status of Lashon Hara in the Torah itself? Right? How does that work? It's in the introduction to the book, The Making of the Gadol, so he discusses this issue of, you know, the Torah itself doesn't keep away information from us, so we should, you know, we see that there is some sort of permissibility of sharing things about people that might not be totally positive from the Torah itself. But on the other hand, the Orach Chaim here says, yeah, but the Torah itself limits it where it's possible. Then he continues on about Vashem Imo, that all of a sudden we get the name of his mother later on. So he says, why do we only learn his name later on? Why didn't we mention it in the Pasuk before when we're first introduced? So he gives two answers, one the Shvach and one Lignai. He says, one is the Shvach, that even though the son was a... had violated the din, the mother was able to bring him in. The mother realized that there's a problem, and the mother felt necessary to bring the son in. And it's to praise the mother that you saw a problem with your son, but yet you were willing to bring him into the authorities. What? I had a family in Phoenix who had a pool set up. You know, they had a pool in their backyard with a garden, you know, with a little fence around it. Mm-hmm. And the child, like they had a child, I don't remember how old the child was at the time, but the child went in to behind the fence, which was against family rules. So the mother takes him out of the pool and brings him down to the police station. And goes, brings him in and says, my son went against the rules and went into the pool without permission when he's supposed to be fenced off. And the cop's like, oh, you know, we'll take it from here, ma'am. Gave him a good talking to.
Stand straight.
That's right. And the second was Ve'echad L'Gnai. And the second one was L'Gnai, to sort of, that it's not somewhat of a shame to the mother. That she would be obligated to do it, but she hadn't taken care of it early. She didn't do it. She didn't do what she needed to on her own. We both say davar ata yudea ki nichmu rachmane al bane, that she had rachmanis earlier on her son when she should have seen the warning signs. Even the pasuk tells in Mishlei v'rachme rishayim achzari, having rachmanis on evil people is a sign of cruelty. Translate that to modern politics as you see fit. Lazeh gila osa kasev kizosa isha v'zeh bana ki gam hiskir shivta la tam atzma shekasafti. Therefore, it reveals her, reveals the Shevet, because the Shevet itself bears some of the blame on this, as we see in our Shabbos classes as well, with the issue of Pilegish Begiva, which the tribe of Binyamin getting going to be punished for the actions of some of its members. Yes. And then finally, we have there's a prominent Sforno here at the end of the parak, because we had a couple of these psukim in a row that seemed to.
It's the name, Shabbat.
Yeah, I'm still trying to.
It's right here.
Right.
This is where you get the name from.
Yeah.
It's
So the last section here is a couple of mitzvos in a row about this person who, you know, got killed for cursing Hashem. And somebody who, and then we have these halachos, a person who hits another person, kills another person, kills a behemah, a person who gives a mum, and sheretach sheret ayin tachas ayin, that pasuk is here as well. So comes the Sforno and says a couple of interesting things. He says, this idea of cursing God is close to some of the punishments given to a person. Why are these in such proximity to another? And he says, Be'er Hatam will give the reason. Va'amar ki onam hapoel harak asher yia nase benosim mischalpim af al pi shu poel echad ba'atzmo yiskalif anshuk v'chilif osam anosim. He says that the same action could be done to different beings or different individuals, and it will result in different, and it will have different repercussions. So the sort of cursing God, kind of like hitting God, striking God, so to speak, also striking people and striking animals, will all have a different punishment that goes along with it. He also adds in, by the way, he says, Shachobel Adam Haya royally anish beguf. Why does it say whenever it talks about punishing people for damaging other people, it throws in this ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, and that pasuk? He says, because in theory we would do that. Lulei chisaron yichaltenu litzamtzein. We don't really have an ability of figuring out exact values to one another. Right, that to straight up say, oh, he knocked off his arms, therefore we're going to knock off your arm. So that's the values of the two are not don't necessarily line up. Right. So therefore, we can't make an appropriate punishment that way. Therefore, it's all going to be monetary value. That's what the Sforno says, which is very interesting. It's like, really? That's the reason? but that's what the Sforno does say. And he says that we had these in a row, that you might be hitting a person, hitting an animal, but hitting an animal is going to be a much lesser punishment than hitting a person. That's the longest story. And then he concludes by saying, Uvenei Yisrael asuka shirtziva Hashem es Moshe, that Bnei Yisrael did as Hashem commanded to Moshe, shelo ragmuhu mifnei sinna, al shahaya ger v'shiniskar v'ezrach, aval asu levilti sur min ha-mitzvah. He says the reason that they stoned this guy was not because they were wicked people, right? Or because they wanted to take something, they hated him for some reason, or they hated Gerim, they hated the foreigners. Rather, Hashem told them, Hashem gave him mitzvos, and we are responsible to do Hashem's mitzvos. We are responsible to follow the law of the land, even though it might seem that's for somehow we're being mean to strangers. The law of the land is the law of the land. Nothing personal. All right, have a good day. I'm going to stop here a little early, but I got to get running.